We're back after dark. Jason Gallagher apparently having some issues. Jason, you're going to have to read a poem and then you're going to have to jet.
Yes, unfortunately, guys, I'm going to have to jet for some basement issues here in rainy St. Louis, Missouri on Father's Day. But we do have a cat poem that we need.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, right away, get the cat poem.
All right.
You got it. And Patreon, thank you. We're going to cover it all. Jason's got to go deal with some flooding, but there's a cat poem that he's got, and I want him to read the cat poem, and then he'll, okay.
It's titled My Cats. Aww. I know, they are limited, have different needs and concerns, but I watch and learn from them. I like the little they know, which is so much. They complain, but never worry. They walk with a surprising dignity. They sleep with a direct simplicity that humans just can't understand. Their eyes are more beautiful than our eyes, and they can sleep 20 hours a day without hesitation or remorse. When I am feeling low, all I have to do is watch my cats, and my courage returns. I study these creatures. They are my teachers.
I quite like that.
Very good.
It's absolutely unlike anything that you would expect Charles Bukowski to.
Yeah, it's wise and very cool. Yeah, I loved it.
His other stuff isn't coherent, Brad.
I wasn't going to say coherent. His stuff is coherent, but you don't expect there's almost like a sage-like property to this. It's very nice.
What I'm thinking of, which is really interesting, it goes back to what we were talking about with whether or not he became a Buddhist or was a practicing. I don't know what year that poem came out. And it would be really interesting to know if that's a later piece of work or if it's something that he was doing in the 50s and 60s. There may have been a philosophical shift that happened at some point that we don't.
I could see a Buddhist teacher saying, consider the cat. He complains, but does he worry?
Right.
Yeah. Well, Jason, we'll let you go. Thank you so much. Hopefully,
of course, guys, it's a pleasure as always.
Yeah.
And I joined Patreon this afternoon for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
We appreciate it.
Of course. All the after darks that I could ever need.
Yeah. We'll look for a way to get you back on here, man.
Oh,
so
thank
good to
you.
See you again.
Thanks, boys. That's so wonderful. I love spending my time with you guys. You guys rock. It's a wonderful show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, take care, guys.
All right. We'll see you.
Bye.
Cool. We got a few fun topics. Oh, what a great guy. Always good to have a poet on. Yeah, he'll be welcome back anytime, especially now that he's a patron.
I'm trying to get him off because I know he's got stuff going, but we'll have to keep in touch with him too when his book of poems comes out and we'll promote it. I know he's not on Twitter, but he'll be promoted on Twitter nonetheless.
Yes, 100%. We've got to look after the writers that are part of the tribe. This is from The Guardian. Charles Bukowski's book on cats to show his gentler side. Here's what he said. This is very, very wise, Brad. In my next life, I want to be a cat, to sleep 20 hours a day and wait to be fed, to sit around licking my ass.
Okay.
Fun. They published a book around cats, and here's what he wrote. He wrote, having a bunch of cats around is good. If you're feeling bad, you just look at the cats, you'll feel better because they know that everything is just as it is. There's nothing to get excited about. They just know. They're saviors. The more cats you have, the longer you live. If you have 100 cats, you'll live 10 times longer than if you have 10. Someday this will be discovered and people will have 1,000 cats and live forever. It's truly ridiculous. He became sentimental about cats in his old age. Howard Sounds, author of Locked in the Arms of a Crazy Life. When he made a bit of money, he lived the suburban life with his wife, Linda Lee, and they had a lot of cats. He got a bit sloppy about them. Yeah. So that's fun.
I can imagine. Similar thing happened to Burroughs in his later years.
Yeah. In the history of one tough motherfucker, he writes in it of an abused, abandoned cat he took in and of how journalists would ask him about life and literature. And I get drunk and hold up my cross-eyed, shot, run-over detailed cat. And I say, look at this. But they don't understand. They say something like, you say you've been influenced by Celine? No, I hold the cat up. By what happens? By things like this, by this, by this.
Okay, yeah. I like that.
Yeah, yeah, very fun. And it goes on. That's an interesting article. Apparently, there's a book called The History of One Tough Mother. Oh, it's a poem. The History of One Tough Motherfucker.
Okay.
I'm going to read this poem. Fuck it.
All right.
He came to the door one night, wet, thin, beaten, and terrorized, a white, cross-eyed, tailless cat. I took him in and fed him, and he stayed, grew to trust me until a friend drove up the driveway and ran him over. I took what was left to a vet who said, not much chance. Give him these pills. His backbone is crushed. But it was crushed before and somehow mended. If he lives, he'll never walk. Look at these x-rays. He's been shot. Look here, the pellets. And still there. Also, he once had a tail. Somebody cut it off. I took the cat back. It was a hot summer, one of the hottest in decades. I put him on the bathroom floor, gave him water and pills. He wouldn't eat. He wouldn't touch the water. I dipped my finger into it and wet his mouth, and I talked to him. I didn't go anywhere. I put in a lot of bathroom time and talked to him and gently touched him. And he looked back at me with those pale blue crossed eyes. And as the days went by, he made his first move, dragging himself forward by his front legs. The rear ones wouldn't work. He made it to the litter box, crawled over and in. It was like the trumpet of possible victory blowing in that bathroom and into the city. I related to that cat. I'd had it bad. Not that bad, but bad enough. One morning he got up, stood up, fell back down, and just looked at me. You can make it, I said to him. He kept trying, getting up, falling down. Finally, he walked a few steps. He was like a drunk. The rear legs just didn't want to do it. And he fell again, rested, then got up. You know the rest. Now he's better than ever. Cross-eyed, almost toothless, but the grace is back. And that look in his eyes never left. And now sometimes I'm interviewed. They want to hear about life and literature. And I get drunk and hold up my cross-eyed, shot, run-over, detailed cat. And I say, look at this. But they don't understand. They say something like, you say you've been influenced by Celine. No, I hold the cat up. By what happens? By things like this, by this, by this. I shake the cat. Hold him up in the smoky and drunken light. He's relaxed. He knows. It's then that the interviews end, although I am proud sometimes when I see the pictures later. And there I am, and there is the cat, and we are photographed together. He too knows it's bullshit, but that somehow it all helps.
Okay.
Fun, easy, little, clever poem.
Yeah. Yep.
Cool. All right, we got more stuff to cover. This is interesting. So over half of Bukowski's collections were published posthumously. And
really?
People say, yeah, they say that the posthumous collections have been known to have been John Martinized, with the poems having been highly edited at a level which was not present during his lifetime. One example of a popular poem, Roll the Dice, when comparing the original manuscript to What Matters Most is How Well You Walk Through the Fire, themes such as hell and alcoholism are removed. The creative editing present includes changing lines from Against Total Rejection and the Highest Odds to Despite Rejection and the Worst Odds. That's some pretty liberal editing.
Yeah.
What
the hell?
Yeah, I don't really know what the story is behind that. I'm sure that there's a lot more to it. But it's sort of controversial.
No, it should be. I mean, that's sort of, you get a figure like that. Don't do any posthumous editing. Just print it. Just print the shit. That's what people want.
Yeah, I mean, there's an article you can find, and the article is called The Senseless Tragic Rape of Charles Bukowski's Ghost by John Martin's Black Sparrow Press. I don't want to throw John Martin under the bus here because he helped make Bukowski's career.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's mixed because if without John Martin, you don't know who Bukowski is, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But apparently we have access to his manuscripts and a lot of uncollected work. There's a BukowskiForum.com, and you can compare the manuscripts with the posthumous books, and you can see that a lot of things have been changed. So
I don't like that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a list too in this blog post. It's mjpbooks.com. There's a list of poetry collections that were published during his lifetime and remain mostly unmolested. And then there's a list of the ones that are posthumous, which are collections, which apparently, you know, maybe you would want to focus on that first list.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and listen to these titles. These are the ones that were not, I mean, that were published in his lifetime. The Days Run Away Like Wild Horses Over the Hills. Mockingbird, Wish Me Luck. Burning in Water, Drowning in Flame. Love is a Dog from Hell. Play the Piano Drunk Like a Percussion Instrument Until the Fingers Begin to Bleed a Bit. Dangling in the Torna Fortia. War All the Time. I love that title. War All the Time. You Get So Alone at Times That It Just Makes Sense. The Rooming House Madrigals. Septuagenarian Stew. The Last Night of the Earth Poems. Great, great titles. Yeah,
Last Night of the Earth is great. Yeah, they're all, I mean, a lot of them are good.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll just leave it at that. Leave it at that. Yeah. If you want to go deeper, you can do some research. Interesting. So that's why you've got to have a very firm literary estate in place.
We're gonna see this very similar thing in the Emily Dickinson story too.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff in there they just didn't understand, so they're like, we'll just take that out. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Anyway, that's next episode.
All right. So he's hanging out with somebody in LA and taking a vacation. They get back to LA, hanging out in the Hollywood Hills. I think this might have been during a sort of like, when he's working on Women. He goes to rock concerts. He gets to meet many of the most notable musicians and artists working in California. And he got to meet R. Crumb, famous for his Mr. Natural and Fritz the Cat. "You know, your stuff is good, kid," said Bukowski when Crumb came over to say hello. "It's the real thing. Just keep away from the cocktail parties." The advice stuck with the artist, who shared many of Bukowski's negative feelings about society and later became the most successful illustrator of Bukowski's work, collaborating on books including Bring Me Your Love and The Captain Is Out to Lunch and the Sailors Have Taken Over the Ship. "The guy just says it right for me," Crumb explains. "I do believe that it takes a strong dose of alienation to make a good artist or writer in the modern world. You can't be too well adjusted and still have anything interesting to say." When his girlfriend saw Bukowski and Crumb getting along so well, she decided to introduce Bukowski to another artist, Spain Rodriguez. "Spain's a cartoonist too," she said. Bukowski took an instant dislike to Rodriguez, possibly because he was handsome, and Bukowski tended to feel threatened by handsome men. "I bet you can't cartoon worth a shit," he said. So he meets R. Crumb, and then there are some books, and then they would collaborate a little bit. I mean, I don't have too much more about that, but they were definitely simpatico.
When you mentioned that before, I was like, yeah, those guys are kind of on the same plane in some way. Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah. So they worked on some comic books as well, where Bukowski supplied the writing and Crumb provided artwork. I'm sure we could find these online, Bukowski and Crumb comics. Let's have a look. Yeah, 3 Charles Bukowski books illustrated by Robert Crumb. Yeah, R. Crumb illustrates Bukowski. I mean, that's like a natural fit. This stuff is so funny. Some of these... Yeah, there's just like a big woman, like, you know, punching herself in the face.
Right.
Just totally a vibe. So if you're looking for a little more, you know, and then this is such, like I said, I just said the word vibe once, man, but it's such a vibe from like the 80s in California, counterculture, the 70s, the 80s, LA, great writer, great cartoonist. And they made good too.
Yeah.
They're funny, right?
Yeah, this one where they're like at a pawn shop or something. You scroll down a little ways, it's pretty damn good. Huh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and then just happened on the marginalian.org. Hey, I thought you could use a poem today. It's a pop-up from Bloom by Emily Dickinson.
Huh, look
to
at
be
that.
A flower is profound responsibility. I didn't ask for a pop-up though. I would rather look at, and there's, oh, right. There's the X.
I want to go to the thing I want to go to the thing I clicked on. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's good stuff. There's no business. Charles Bukowski, illustrations by R. Crumb. Yeah, you know, yo, I'd love to get my hands in some of these too from Black Sparrow Press. These would be a lot of fun. Yeah.
For sure.
I'm
started
sure
collecting, Kevin, just on this note, I've started collecting Fate magazines from the
1950s. Oh, nice.
It's just all weirdo, like... I got
Fate.
This one because there's an article about going to Mexico to investigate a devil cult in this cave, but like UFO like I don't know, you can get them for like $10.
Says saucers over Mexico.
Yeah.
Dude,
for the moon and shit.
I can't go inside a used bookshop, like one of those sprawling ones that doesn't have an index of books. I can't.
Yeah,
I worked in one at the university. I mean, it just I would want to bring a backpack and take everything home with me. I mean, it was outrageous.
Well, when we do live in Detroit, I might take you to one of my favorite places in the world. Yeah.
Do we have a subject for live in Detroit yet?
No, I gotta meditate upon it a little bit. I got some candidates, but
and I don't want to be.
It's got to be just right. It's got to be just right.
Yep, it's just got to be just right. You're right. Maybe we can find some creative way we can do a performance thing with it. Maybe we bring an actor with, or we have some actors there. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Yeah. I will say too, on Patreon, and I might say this on Main at some point, if you want to help bring Art of Darkness live to a town and you know you can get an audience out for it, not five people, not 10 people, but 25, 30, 40 people, we want to hear from you. If you think you can make it happen, we're open-minded. We're feeling it out.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I don't know. Are we going to go to Sochi? Are we going to go to Tokyo? Probably not. But,
you know, unfortunately, some of these things come down to money.
Yeah. For now. Mm-hmm. But for real, I mean, if that gets your juices flowing, we want to hear from you. Even if it's just to like float the idea, da da da. But that's how a lot of this stuff works. I mean, you heard during the Main episode about this. It's just some guy who's like, I want to produce an event. You know, we're not even necessarily asking you to produce anything. It's more like, do you think there'd be interest? Or I don't know, just something to think about. Put a pin in it, Patreon.
Yeah.
We already really appreciate your support. You don't have to do a damn thing more for us.
No,
but
if you're
thinking
plenty
about it, but definitely like Detroit 2024 is happening.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think Fitzgerald Part 2 has to happen too.
Yeah, well, I would like to do that.
We'll figure it
too
out.
Early
we will
for
figure
me
it out. I know, it's a lot. We're still in the middle of season 3.
Exactly.
All right. Cool. So now I've got we covered the cats, we covered the posthumous stuff. And now I got to do the FBI and his Macintosh computer that he got. So here we go. I'm reading from the LA Times. I just have to do the ad blocker nonsense. That's okay. Let's go. And this is from September of 2013. The FBI kept its own notes on dirty old man Charles Bukowski. The writer was investigated by the agency as a civil servant with ties to the underground press and for being a self-described dirty old man. So the FBI will tail you if you describe yourself as a dirty old man.
Yeah, it seems weird to get into his business, but okay.
I got some really bad news for our Anon friends on the tweeters.
Yeah.
If this was going on, right? I got some really bad. Well, they know already.
Yeah.
Let's see. Recently, National Book Award winning author William T. Volman went public with his FBI surveillance, writing about his experiences of both being watched and reading the report. At one point, as Volman writes in this month's Harper's, he was suspected of being the Unabomber.
Yeah.
Now, I did not know that.
I knew
now
that,
the FBI has released files showing it kept tabs on hundreds of writers. including Bukowski.
They stopped doing that though, right?
Naturally. Yeah, now it's everybody. Good. Now it's everybody, Brad.
Well, yeah, that's the true. Art of Darkness 50 years from now, every episode will have their FBI file read.
We used to be a proper country. They used to monitor just the writers. Now it's everybody. Everybody just self-reports. You just check in.
Right.
As noted last week on Open Culture, more than 100 pages of the FBI's 1968 file on Bukowski have been scanned and published on Bukowski.net. It seems that the feds had a hard time getting any dirt on the poet. And I'm going to go to Bukowski.net. That was the one I was looking for because I kind of want to know if we can. Oh, is it not? Oh, Bukowski. That's wrong. Bukowski.net. Yeah, I want to see if I can find the date of the Katz poem. Let's see.
Yeah, be curious.
No, there's a poem called Young Katz. Well, anyway, I'll worry about it later. I might not be able to on the fly. Anyway, it seems that the feds had a hard time getting any dirt on the poet. Some of the entries into his file primarily involve his neighbors admitting that they didn't know much about the reserved but ribald. That's a good word, ribald. Postal worker who went on to write Women, and that he was a quiet man who seldom had visitors. Sounds suspicious to me. Bukowski was being investigated by the FBI for his involvement in the underground LA newspaper Open City. Bukowski had a recurring column called Notes from a Dirty Old Man. In an interview with the FBI, Bukowski stated that by February 8th of 1968, he had contributed 41 articles to Open City. He also said that each column was an intermixture of fiction and fact, and that the prose is highly romanticized to give the story more juice.
Yeah.
They got to give it more juice.
Yeah.
One of the columns is included in the 1968 file. In it, Bukowski describes an inebriated woman releasing a bunch of pet birds, $5,000 worth of birds, and then being beaten by her husband, who was also very drunk. The FBI did not provide any analysis of either the political content nor literary merits of the story.
They didn't have any.
So the local cops liked him and the FBI was just kind of stumped. The FBI is like, yeah. So, but you can go to Bukowski.net/FBI and you can view the pages in order.
Wow.
You can find, you know, Unfit for Military Service.
Sure.
You know, you can find, let's see here. Here's just some of the headlines. Addresses and jobs through 1957, arrest records, notes of a dirty old man column. So they would keep an eye on it.
Yeah. On old book. Yeah.
As they do. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're honestly, at that time, they were probably spending, the federal government was probably spending more money to assemble that report than he made in a year.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's paying in taxes and they're just taking it out to just, I guess, like watch him and monitor.
Right.
It doesn't seem like it's like super heavy surveillance, but
they're not like sitting outside of his house every night, but
they probably did a bit of that.
Right.
They probably would do a tiny bit of that. Yeah. If they're going to assemble a file on you.
Oh yeah. They've got to get
point.
Now they would start with like a digital forensic. Probably,
oh yeah, they would just press a button and just grab it all in 5 seconds. They already have it.
Yeah,
that's the world we live in now, Brad. Nothing to see.
Not me. They don't got me, Kevin.
Nope. All right, and then the last thing I got for this After Dark is the business about the Macintosh computer.
Yeah.
Okay. When Marina, his daughter, visited San Pedro for Christmas, and this is from the Locked in the Arms of a Crazy Life, Linda Lee told her that she was thinking of giving Bukowski a computer. He had changed from a manual to an electric typewriter, finding it easier and quicker, and without telling him her plans, she'd ascertained he would be willing to try a word processor. Marina knew something about the technology and convinced Linda Lee she should buy an Apple Macintosh because it was designed for people who knew little or nothing about computers. I had a feeling that whatever it was, it had to be something he could mostly teach himself, says Marina. Yeah, I have a hard time thinking of him in front of a DOS prompt.
Mm-hmm.
Linda Lee was disconcerted by how bulky the box, screen, keyboard, and printer were after the simplicity of a typewriter. And the price was a not inconsiderable $5,000 for what they wanted, but they bought it. Oh, shit, said Bukowski when he opened his gift on Christmas Day. I'm going to lose my soul.
And he was right.
Base department. He's right. That, what a thing to say, dude. And you're still, you're all over that. We're all still saying the same fucking thing,
yeah,
aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
As we make this podcast on an Apple Macintosh, probably collectively all our equipment doesn't even cost $5,000 in today's money.
Right. Right.
They took the computer up to his room and Marina began explaining how it worked. Just as I expected, he would listen to me, but it was really obvious he wanted to play with it and try it out and learn how things worked himself, she says. He experimented most of the day, reluctant to go downstairs to eat. Oh, this is a miracle, he said. Look, it's correcting my mistakes. I don't know how to spell. I know what the words are, but I don't know how to spell them. And look what it's doing. He liked it. The Apple Mac reinvigorated Bukowski as a writer. He liked the way his words appeared on the screen, on a throne, as he put it.
On a throne.
And enjoyed. This is the Faustian bargain we all make, yeah, man. I'm going to lose my soul. This is awesome.
Right.
He enjoyed printing in different fonts and sizes and types and type. But the greatest benefit was that he could write more. His routine had been to type at night when he was drinking and listening to the radio and go back the following evening to correct by hand, discarding poems he didn't like and laboriously retyping those he did. Errors of spelling, syntax, and fact still crept into the typescripts, mistakes which always embarrassed him. Now he could correct his work on screen and the poems slid from the printer exactly as he wanted.
Yes, sir.
He had always been prolific, unusually so, with more than 40 books to his name, most published within the past 20 years. But after getting the computer, he more than doubled his output, work he mailed to John Martin's new office in Santa Rosa, Northern California. Hmm. At Martin's suggestion, Bukowski also began a journal on the Apple Mac, posthumously published in 1997 with illustrations by R. Crumb. And that's as the captain is out to lunch and the sailors have taken over the ship. In the entry of the 22nd of November of 1991, Bukowski explains how the computer aided his work. Well, my 71st year has been a hell of a productive year. I have probably written more words this year than any year of my life. This computer that I started using on January 18th has had so much to do with it. It's simply easier to get the word down. It transfers more quickly from the brain, or wherever this comes from, to the fingers, and from the fingers to the screen where it is immediately visible, crisp and clear. It's not a matter of speed per se. It's a matter of flow, a river of words. And if the words are good, then let them run with ease. Ah, but there were problems, of course. Nights when he had not correctly saved what he had written and lost everything. Oh, God. Although he reflected this was a petty thing compared with knocking over a good bottle of wine and one of the cats sprayed the disk drive, necessitating the return of the computer to the shop for repairs. You remember those old Macs? They would not. Dude, there was an era where up until the late aughts where you were still dealing with bullshit, crashes, viruses, and more on the PC side, the viruses, but like... Mm-hmm. Even up until then, stuff would just stop working. And then suddenly something clicked and everything just works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very rarely does stuff crash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And plus the stuff is cheaper. So cheap now that like just give it a few years and just buy another one.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I mean, if you buy something for a Mac back then for $5,000, you're like, this thing better last the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right. Well, yeah, oh man, and those things were tough. But I guess if you were just using it as a word processor, I could see it being good. But I mean, it's so funny to think about Bukowski maybe having a few drinks, shutting the thing down in the morning and realizing,
God damn it, there.
Fucking bastard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think this is where most of the first book he wrote using the Mac was The Last Night of the Earth poems.
Yeah, it is hard. You read some Bukowski, you do not imagine he was typing this out on a Mac.
Man, thank God he got out of here before the internet took off. I'll just say that.
Right.
Hank, you dodged one of the biggest bullets in history. You got out when you could, buddy.
Yeah.
Brad, thanks for being my podcast husband.
Thanks for rocking and rolling.
Did you have a good time?
Yeah, I did. That was great. I mean, you know, being on this end of the episodes is always pleasurable because I didn't have to do anything. I just showed up, plugged the mic in, and we're good to go. And you did a great job, told the whole story, and I feel like I know who Bukowski is now. So that's great.
He lived until 1994.
Yeah, that's what's crazy. I assumed he was dead well before that, honestly. I don't know why.
He lived until March of 94. He was alive when The Downward Spiral came out for about a week.
He may have heard The Downward Spiral.
Well, that's how I measure time. Everything is...
Right.
Yeah. Anno Domini, Downward Spiral. Yeah. But that is a crazy thing to think. Born in 1920.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought he died like before I was born for some reason, but it makes sense.
I'm glad he was 73, 74. So
yeah, dude, for a guy, and I mean, he smoked like crazy, I'm sure.
Yeah,
drank like crazy, never stopped drinking, really. Pretty, I mean, 74, living like that, 74 is pretty damn good.
He died the day after the downward spiral killed him.
he got a like a preprint, heard it, was like, well, that's it. I mean, it's only down from here, right? Like,
yeah. Oh, Brad, and you're prepping Dickinson, and I've got
this massive tome right here. Yeah,
get in the book club Patreon. Join us on the day if you care to. Just know we've got Blood Meridian planned for December. We're gonna have Aaron Gwynn come on. Yeah. We did have that planned.
We've had that planned for like months.
That's on the record. So we're not doing that just because Cormac passed away.
Yeah.
Pour one out for a great one. And
For sure. I'm going up to the woods tomorrow. I'm going to be in the woods for 2-3 nights. Just me, some writing, probably pour one out for Cormac up there. See if I can conjure his spirit a little bit. So, yeah.
Good job, Brad.
Yeah.
You're going to enjoy it. And Patreon, one more time, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Check out the book club dates at the website, artofdarkpod.com. Get in the Telegram if you're not there, t.me/artofdarkpod. Thank you for the support. Absolutely. We'll see you on the next one.
Yeah. Okay.